I never hardly did any exercise. I didn't spend time in nature. I didn't do very much at all because I was just constantly exhausted. I piled the weight on because I have got a sedentary desk job. So that led on to, trying to eat much better. And I lost over 5 stone actually quite quickly.
Hi, and welcome to episode 121 of the Midlife Reshape podcast. Now, this week I'm continuing the Turning Point series with another interview from former client and current member of the Midlife Reshape program, Elaine Hudson. Now, those of you who are long-time listeners will know that this interview was aired probably over a year ago. But what I'm doing, for two reasons really, one selfishly because it's the Easter week and it just helps me stay on top of production and delivery and take some time off over Easter. But more importantly, I also think that Elaine's interview is worth an airing again because in terms of turning points, as you'll know, as you'll see with the interview with Elaine, there was a key point in Elaine's own life and journey where she kind of realised that something needed to change, and she'll share the story and what that the transformation that led to it. And again, the Turning Point series is all about, for me, it fascinates me what it is that sometimes kicks us into that action. Because I think most of us, if not all of us, at some point in our life, often in that midlife area, that grey area called midlife, there's crossroads, there's points where we kind of wake up and think, hang on a minute, is this what I want? Is this it? And we have a choice. Now, that isn't like the X Factor choice where, you know, it's my last chance, it's my only chance I'm going to get, I'm too old for this. It's not that kind of rubbish. We have a choice in every moment. But there are some key, significant points in life where it becomes more stark to us. And I think this is where those moments, it's really useful to have these turning point stories just to sow a seed so that when you are at those crossroads, those points where perhaps you're realising you're stuck in a rut or you're not happy in work or your health isn't where it wants to be, that you know that there is another way, that you don't have to just accept, that you don't just have to go with it. You can turn the direction of you, the journey that you're on, the direction of travel, to a different one. And you can actually dare to dream bigger. Dare to think bigger, to hope for more. Even if, for example, one of the classics is, you know, somebody who perhaps has always struggled with their weight. And I know I've been one of those people. It's been up and down and yo-yo diet here, that, this, that and the other. Always believed that it was never for me. And don't get me wrong, I'm still a work in progress, but I'm a lot better place. In terms of, because of the work I do on myself, which is a lot of the philosophy, the grounded research-based philosophy that I share in the podcasts, in my work with clients, etc. But the point of that is that we can often buy into this script that it's just the way it is. I'll always be. I've always been, and therefore I always will be. I often describe that as predictive text, predictive sort of narratives that we have. You know, you've got predictive text, but predictive stories. We have this and it's been that way, therefore it will continue to be. So for me and for many others, just because we have had this ongoing story that tells us I've always been overweight, I've always battled with my weight, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be the same in the future. So that is where I think these turning point stories can really, really be insightful and inspirational. Now, in so doing, in saying this, doesn't mean that suddenly life can become a bed of roses and easy. There's always the work to be done. And I think that's, again, that comes through, I think, with Elaine's story, and it certainly come through the likes of Kate Jackson's story in episode 117. The work is still to be done. Perhaps you will still carry around some of those old embedded coping strategies, whether it's overwork, perhaps reliance on silence as a coping strategy, or binge eating might be something that you constantly manage. But it gets easier and you get tools in the kit so that you can move from being a victim of it and at the whim of binge eating urges, that kind of thing, to being more in control. And for me, that's really empowering. So I'm kind of steering off a little bit from the topic in Elaine's interview, but I think this is the whole point of the turning point, to give you some inspiration, to make you really appreciate that you can, if you have some sort of aspiration or dream, you can. Yes, there's action. Yes, there's some clarification. Yes, we need to take some realistic, practical steps, and you need to sweat the sprouts, the sprout-sized habits. You need to do the work. But the rewards, the adventure, the excitement, the passion that you can breathe back into life, that can be injected back into life, is just amazing. And I think Elaine's interview, as you'll see, is just a great one to illustrate that point. So on with the podcast. But before I do, could I just ask, if you're not already subscribed to the podcast, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening in a pod feed of choice or just on Tinternet, could you do me a favour and subscribe? Hit that subscribe button on YouTube, subscribe in your pod feed of choice. It just really helps spread the word on the show, but it also means you won't miss future episodes, and it makes looking back to previous episodes, like episode 116 and 117, makes it so much easier for you to find them. So it would be really great. And if you're already subscribed, how about a review? It would be really great if on subscribe on YouTube, you could hit that thumbs up, leave a comment, would be brilliant. On your pod feed of choice, just leave a review and a rating. It would be mint if you could. And I'm cheeky enough to ask for a 5-star review if you really do like the content. That would be brilliant. And if you're not sure how to do that, pop over to midlifereshape.com/podcast. You find everything you need there to do that. And just one tiny little ask as well. If you know one other person, another person in your network who's in a similar position, perhaps they're midlife, they're questioning the direction of travel for their life, their health, and you feel that perhaps the content in these podcasts might be of benefit to them, then why not forward it on? Just hit the share button in your pod feed of choice or forward the email, whatever, forward it on to them and tell them it's worth a listen. That would be great because, again, it spreads the word and it helps fellow restless midlifers, those of us who don't want to roll over and just accept that we're just getting too old to carry on the fight and to really continue to seek out adventures. So that would be great. Thank you very much. If you have any feedback in relation to this podcast episode or any others, give me a shout at dave@restlessmidlifer.com. On with the pod. Hi, Lynn. It's great to have you along on the Restless Midlifer podcast. We've obviously been on a journey and I've watched your journey over the last few years with awe. And I think the whole journey you've been on in terms of the things you're doing and have done is very inspiring and certainly speaks to me as the spirit of the Restless Midlifer, you know, that finding adventure and rediscovering it. So anyway, without me waffling on anymore, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and background and then we'll dig into the story?
Yeah, my name's Elaine. I am 48. I'm a mum of a teenage boy, married, and I am a solicitor. And I came across Dave quite a few years ago now, maybe 5 years, something like that, at a meeting at work. We often have a guest speaker at our national meetings, and one of them is often about well-being, mental, physical, stress, that sort of thing. And when I saw Dave, something about his style and the things that he was saying really resonated with me and stuck with me. And there was lots of talk about juggling stress in your life and when things get too much and not making the most of your days and work-life balance, these sort of things. And it really stuck with me. And I hadn't realised, I don't think, until that meeting that I'd got in a bit of a bad place with shifts. I'm a shift worker and I was just constantly exhausted, and I would work all night and then I would wake up and I'd be exhausted, and then I'd watch a bit of telly and then I'd go back to work, and I just seemed to not do an awful lot with my free time. And I realised that there were things that I really needed to focus on to change that. And that was the start of it, really. Me thinking there is more to life than just working and being knackered, basically. And that was, and it really did stick with me. And I remember sending a message to our business manager who had booked Dave. And I said, you know, it was amazing. And I really took a lot away from the talk, which honestly, often that doesn't happen. And she said that we have a budget to spend on our mental and physical well-being, and she said if you want to do some one-to-one work with Dave, we will fund that. And I thought that's great, and then that's how I came to work with Dave, and things started to change for me.
Yeah, awesome. And I remember that. It's funny, isn't it, with the COVID, that feels like a time warp, but I think it will be about 5 years.
I think it probably is, yeah.
That was down, was it Manchester or...
Yes, I think it was Manchester. Yeah.
You lose track, but so that was interesting. And anyway, we kind of started that journey, and I know it was a starting point, And we'll dig into that a little bit just to get the feel, because I think sometimes counterintuitively, the things that happen, they can start from little things, can't they? Little changes and transformations. And that's really what I talk about, sprout sweating, the small stuff, you know, the small significant things. You can make some real big, amazing changes just by addressing some of those smaller things. And then we'll get into your journey, because I think it's brilliant. So anyway, do you want to talk about that initial bit that we, you know, those initial first few weeks of that not necessarily the coaching experience, but what happened and the journey you went on?
I mean, Dave was very much guided by, you know, what do you want to get out of this? What do you want to focus on? And the main thing for me, being a shift worker, I'd been a shift worker for about 10 years by this point, and I still was not coping very well with them at all. My shifts were very often, they would start at 11 p.m. at night, they would finish at 7 or 8 in the morning. I was struggling to sleep. I was just constantly exhausted. So the first thing that we really focused on was sleep. And Dave had some amazing tips, different things that I had to change about my bedroom, the lighting, what I ate, what I drank. A lot of it, unfortunately, couldn't apply to me. Things like going to bed at the same time, keeping that routine was just, you know, like he had to do a lot of working around the shifts. And my sleep did improve, very much so. And I managed to change a couple of the night shifts as well, which was life-changing. I've now gone part-time because, you know, I can lucky, I can afford to do that. And again, that's been life-changing. So just by getting the sleep aspect sorted, that gave me energy then to focus on other things that I just, you know, I never hardly did any exercise. I didn't spend time in nature. I didn't do very much at all because I was just constantly exhausted and, you know, worried about, oh, I'm going to get through this next night shift. So yeah, it is a very much a snowball effect. And once I'd got the sleep side sorted, I had so much more energy, and that I think gave me, you know, that much needed boost to get the weight off. I piled the weight on because I have got a sedentary desk job. Shift work again is not great for your mental or physical health. So I had piled the weight on, and I decided right now's the time to start to try and get that off.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you talk about you started with getting the energy. And I've just done an interview I've done a couple actually recently with some people in the financial space, and it talks about getting your finances right. And there are comparisons in the sense that financially you just need to create some space, some financial space in order to. And once you clear that, you clear a bit of headspace, you can start to think about it. And I think it's the same with energy, isn't it? If you're feeling run down, just totally tired all the time, it's really hard to think about the big stuff, the big goals. And so I think that makes a heck of a difference, doesn't it? I remember when we've talked before, you talked about that you felt like it was a bit of a rut, that the routines were a bit, you were in a bit of a rut around that.
I mean, my life was just, you know, work, school runs. There was no sort of joy in it. And the downtime that I did have was kind of wasted doing things I didn't enjoy, like watching telly. And so I needed to do things that would make my mental and physical health improve. And once I got the sleep sorted, that was a real snowball effect from there on, really.
Yeah. I think that's something that many of us can relate to. I know that there's been times, probably a couple of times in my life where you do feel like you fall into those routines. And it's understandable because we're habitual creatures and life is full on, isn't it? You've got your life, your work, your family. And none of those things are particularly, you know, you don't want to sacrifice them, you know, family, et cetera. It's just that you then forget about you in the middle of that. And I think that's something a lot of us can relate to.
Yeah. And you've got to make time for you, and you've got to put the work in if you want to have good mental and physical health. And I kind of wasn't doing that. And it's a slow process, I think. And you don't realise that you're kind of running on empty a lot of the time, even though you're not doing very much, if that makes sense. You're just kind of coping.
Yeah. That phrase running on empties, I think that's a powerful thing because I think you can get used to running on empty or almost on empty and just sort of chugging along, can't you? And just doing what you're doing. So yeah, I think that's something a lot of us can relate to. And like I say, so, certainly me. And I think it's that point that it doesn't have to be that way, but sometimes you just need a moment or something to help you sort of see it a little bit differently. So you, I mean, obviously this was the, as you said, the snowball, you started to do that. What were the first things that you started to do then? Because,
Yeah, I mean, once I started to get my sleep sorted and I had more energy in the day, I thought I need to lose the weight and I'd like to get fit. And I kind of don't, I don't do things by halves. I wouldn't recommend doing this, but there was a charity that was doing 100 consecutive days of running, and you had to run a minimum of 2 miles every single day for 100 days. And it was a charity that was quite close to my heart. It was run by the father of the one of the two police officers who were shot, the female police officers who were shot and killed in Manchester. And I'd actually met them when I used to work in Manchester. And I thought, if her dad can go out every day and run after losing his daughter, then I can. And the first day I ran, spent most of it probably lying on the pavement. I couldn't run for a bus, but I was determined to run that 2 miles. Like I say, I wouldn't recommend it. You're probably going to get injured. But and the next day, could hardly walk. Went out again, ran the 2 miles. I logged it all on a fitness app to keep me accountable, so it was there every day. And I did it. I did the 100 days of running, and by the end of it, you know, I could run the 2 miles quite easily, and that led on to other things. My friend took me to join a running club, so that I wasn't running on my own every day and doing the same boring run. And I remember the first time I turned up at the athletics track, there was me and I think three blokes who used to run about 5 or 6 minute mile, and I could probably run, you know, a 10 minute mile. But they were lovely. They weren't elitist or snobby. They were so welcoming. And I'm still at that running club now. The running really helped with the eating and the sleep as well, because I think once you sort your sleep out, you eat better. And I was running, so I wanted to fuel my body for that. So that led on to, you know, trying to eat much better. And I lost over 5 stone, actually quite quickly. Which again then snowballed onto other things that I wanted to do to look after my physical and mental health.
Yeah, because so much there. So firstly, the 100 days, I mean, that shows a determination and yeah, it's horses for courses, you know, people will hopefully pick whatever suits them and what have you. But I think there is, you mentioned about the work. I think there is always going to be work in this, isn't there?
Yes,
In
very
this.
much so. Yeah.
But
Yeah, but it's a work that I enjoy. I like the challenge that I would set myself. You know, you can't rely on motivation. And this was a lot of the other work that I did with you, was, you know, that motivation is not going to last forever. You've got to have a routine, you've got to have that structure, you've got to have that dedication and that work ethic. But if you know, if you find something that you love, then it isn't a chore and you actually feel really good about yourself, that you know, you've stuck to things and see the progress and the rewards from it.
yeah, and I think so that finding something you love, it can be a bit daunting, maybe if you haven't been particularly active or tried things out. But there's also a little bit of excitement in that because I think you find out what you do love. And to be fair, you've added to your repertoire of things that you do, which we'll get into, no doubt. But I think, funny enough, I had a conversation with somebody at the CrossFit box today, and she was saying that, because we're talking about midlife and she's not, you know, she's a lot younger. But what she was saying was, I don't want to be thinking, constantly thinking about my image and weight and all of that all of the time. And we had a discussion and I kind of thought, you know, I do the CrossFit and yes, I do it for the benefits, but I've grown to, I really love it. So it's not like it's always on my mind that I must do. And that's the magic of trying to find
Yeah.
things, I think, you know, that you enjoy. So you did the, I mean, what, 100 days is three and a bit months, isn't it? I mean, that's
Yeah,
a
without a day off, it's yeah, it was really tough. It was mentally tough because I was working shifts as well. So if I was, I finished an overnight shift and then I'd wake up, get my little boy from school, and then I'd start working, and I had to get that running no matter how awful I was feeling. There were times that I was ill and I still dragged myself out because I'd got to 85 days. It's like, no way I'm missing a day now. So yeah.
And all credit to you, because I mean there is some determination in there with that. Now you mentioned a couple of things. You talked about that. How was it that you said that you fit the running helped with your sleep or the diet helped? I was trying to pick up which way
I think
around it was. Or...
the sleep was the first thing, and that gave me the energy to start running.
Right.
And I think once I've started to look after my physical health, and I mean, running when you're 5 stone overweight is not easy. And I just wanted to get the weight off. I thought, enough is enough. I hadn't realized how much it had creeped on and how much better I started to feel when I lost it. So, but the running definitely helped with my eating because I wasn't the sort of person who would go out for a run and say, oh, I'm going to reward myself with a Mars bar now. It was like, that was awful. That was really hard, and I'm not going to ruin it. So it helped me definitely have better eating habits. Yeah, they kind of went hand in hand, I think.
Yeah, and I'll ask you about the eating side in a moment if you don't mind. But I think that's an interesting thing because that's the challenge with doing fitness, is that if you're kind of doing it in order to, I've got a mate who I remember a few years ago got really into running. He used to say, "I'm earning beer credits." That's what he'd say. "I'm going for a run and earning beer
Yeah.
credits," and we'd have a laugh.
Yeah.
But if you think about it,
You've got to run a long way to get beer credits.
yeah, there's a lot of work got to be done for beer credits, but also it's that idea that you license yourself to then have stuff, which, if you're in a place where you're managing maintaining it, it's probably okay, but it's that danger of licensing. It is, we morally license it. Oh, I deserve it. I've worked hard. And actually, it is potentially undermining or definitely undermining the effort that you've just put into that. So I think that's an interesting one. I love the way you framed it for yourself as well.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, women especially, I'm just too old for that nonsense now. But when I was younger, people would punish themselves with exercise. So they would go to the gym and they'd say, I've got to come here because I've eaten this, so I've got to burn this off. And it would be almost a punishment. I've got to burn this amount of calories because that's what I've eaten, and I've got to burn off that whatever I had, that dessert or whatever. Yeah.
And I understand that because
Yeah,
there was a big,
absolutely.
very big focus, and I think what we've learned now is that obviously, firstly, it's very hard to burn off a burger, in terms of exercise, but also it's really hard to be accurate. From my understanding, in terms of reading around the research, is that the devices that we use or the rough calculations
Oh, they
can
massively overestimate, don't they? Yeah. But also just coming at it from that sort of frame of mind, I used to go to the gym and do lots of classes and, get all sweaty and not really enjoy it and not make any progress. It was just something, oh, I feel I should do this.
I think that's a biggie. It is about what you find enjoy, and I know you can grow to enjoy something. You've got to give it enough time to see, is this something that's going to stick? I think there's an element of that, but there are some things you think, this is just not me. So you kind of you give yourself permission to move on. What life's too short, isn't it, to push yourself through it? And there are so many different opportunities, different things you could do. But before we get into some of those other things, you talked about the eating side. Was there anything, just out of interest, was there anything, approach or anything that you sort of did with that? Or was it just a natural thing that started to fall out as a result of the work you were doing?
Well, I went to like a slimming group, which, to be honest, I didn't enjoy it. Yeah, I didn't, but the only thing I found beneficial from that was the weekly weigh-in, being accountable, having to go along and knowing that I would be accountable every week. But I didn't really enjoy the sort of group sessions. I didn't find those particularly helpful. So I did keep going just to get the weigh in. But the way I got my weight off, I did intermittent fasting. So I wouldn't eat for quite a lot of the day, and then I'd have a large meal at night. And that worked really well for me. And I just did a much higher protein, low carb diet. So it wasn't like a keto or anything like that. But instead of having, chips or pasta. I would just have like meat and vegetables instead. And that worked really well for me. It filled me up. And it just kind of settled into that routine, and it did work really well for me. I didn't struggle with, once I got into the routine, I didn't struggle. The weight came off really quite quickly with all the exercise.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, is to find what works for
What works for
you
you?
in it, or that you can settle into a routine with, rather than trying to stick to something that somebody else says you should do, or this is the latest, whatever. But it's interesting, isn't it, that I'm curious as well about the intermittent fasting and how that worked, because that doesn't work for everybody, but it also there are what I've found for me, but also other people, is if you tend to have plenty going on in your life, as in work and other things, that seems to be something that can fit, that can sort of dovetail a bit into life. So what do you think it was that helped? How did that help you, or how did it sort of settle in as a routine for you reasonably
Well, I've
well?
always been told, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. You must have breakfast. And then I read a book called, I think it's actually here, and I think it's called Breakfast is the Most Important Meal of the Day, Not, or something like that. And I read it, and it was saying, your hunger hormones are at their lowest in the morning. And for some people, yes, if they don't have breakfast, they'll be eating cakes at 11 o'clock. But for a lot of people, your hunger is the least. Why would you eat when force yourself to eat when you don't want to, when you're trying to lose weight? And for some people, once they start eating, they don't stop. And that was me. Once I'd had my breakfast, I'd eat something else and something else. And I actually found that, especially if I got myself busy in the day and active, I could go all day until sort of tea time. If I was really hungry, I would have something to eat, a snack at lunch. But often I would just have one meal a day to about 5 o'clock. And then I would def you know, I would start work in the evening and I would still have my treats because I've not eaten that many calories because of the intermittent fasting. So yeah, it definitely worked for me. And I still do it now, not every day, but some days, quite often won't have breakfast. And quite often we'll have one really quite big, nice meal to look forward to in the evening.
It's interesting, isn't it? I think we can fall into some of these, as you say, the breakfast is the most important meal of the day. I think that originated from some interpretation of some review, might have been a meta review of a bunch of different sort of results and what have you. And actually, it was misinterpreted, I think, wasn't it?
I
So
think
it's
so. I've got here. I can't remember actually what it's called now, but I read it and it just made a lot of sense to me. Yeah, and I thought actually you don't need to eat breakfast. You look at it from an ancestral sort of point of view as well, and it talks a lot about that. And you would find your food, you would kill your food. You didn't have refrigerators, they couldn't keep their food, so they would eat the food. And it was very much periods of famine and then eating, and that's kind of naturally how we are. I thought, yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. And I didn't spend all my days hungry and thinking about food.
Yeah, I think, and that's an interesting one, because again, it's starting to get to know yourself, isn't it? Because as I say, I do know people who, because of the routines, rituals, it is something they have to have, etc. But we get to know ourselves, which is a biggie. So that kind of settled in as a routine. You mentioned calories. Now, was that something, I'm just curious, was that something that you monitored, or was it just something that you kind of intuitively felt like, I probably haven't had a lot today, I have done a lot, that kind of thing? How did you work that?
I didn't count my calories because I was only having one meal a day. It's actually difficult to go over your whatever your calories. My calories probably would have been, I don't know, 1700 calories a day. If you're only eating one meal a day, it's pretty difficult to get a meal that's got 1700 calories in it. If you're eating healthy, which I was, even though I would have like a big bag of sweets at work, so I didn't track it. That is something that recently I have done with my weightlifting coach. I've had the nutrition side for a while, and that was very much tracking your sleep, tracking your steps, tracking all your macros, tracking your calories. So I did track it, but that was sort of recently, not when I was losing the weight.
And that's interesting, because it's a tool that you can bring in and out as and when you need it. So we'll dig into that actually, and as we go forward. So yeah, so it's interesting. So that started in it, and it started to build, and you started to feel better, and you joined the running club. So what started happening now? Because obviously, how long did it take you roughly to, do you think, to sort of lose that 5 stone, or was it sort of a chunk, and then the last stone or two took a lot longer? How did that
Yeah, that
work?
was exactly how it was. I lost 4 stone in about 5 months, so really quickly. And then the last kind of £10, I think, took about 3 months to get the last, yeah, that last sort of £10 to a stone took ages.
I think that seems to be typical as well, isn't it? As the body starts to get a bit like, oh well, come on now, you're taking the mickey, you're taking it too much. But yeah, no, but I think that's just the natural adaptation of the body, isn't it? So that, as you got to there, was that a target that you had in mind, or was it just what you kind of started feeling? Yeah, I'm happier now, type of thing.
I just thought it was a nice round number. I think I'd lost about 1.5 stone. I was happy at that. And I think I'd lost about 4 stone, 9 pounds. And I thought, oh, 5 stone, that sounds good. I think I'd only lost 5 stone for about 2 days. I put it like those couple of pounds back on, but I just wanted my 5 stone certificate from the swimming club. So yeah. And that put me in the healthy weight bracket for my height. So.
Cool. And so obviously the running was the kicking off point, but I know it led to more, didn't it? Tell us about your sort of what it moved into, because I know it's had a bigger impact, not just on physical health, but your psychological and mental health, I guess,
I'm certainly not a good runner at all. I'm one of the slowest runners, even now, one of the slowest runners at my running club. But I realised just the benefit of movement outdoors. I never run on a treadmill, it's always outdoors. So from there, I started hiking. I live very near the Lake District. I'm very lucky. And my husband works up in the Lake District. And yeah, I just started going out walking and realised how much I enjoyed that. So I set myself the challenge of doing all the Wainwrights, which are the hills and mountains in the Lake District. So there's 214 of those. So I decided, that's going to be my next challenge, even though I've never been up a mountain in my life. Couldn't navigate, didn't have any gear, just started from a friend from the running club actually took me up Helvellyn. I had no idea what to expect, no idea whether I'd get to the top. And just the feeling of accomplishment that I got when I got to the top, I'm like, this is amazing. Why have I never done this before? Couldn't drag me to the lakes, it's boring. So after that day, I thought, I'm going to go and do another mountain. And then I heard about the Wainwrights and the Wainwright Challenge. So I think I set my, was it 2018 or 2019? I started from scratch and decided to do them all in a year. And it's one of the best things that I've ever done, just being out in nature. A lot of it was on my own. I really enjoyed the solitude. And that led to starting wild camping, just because of the journey. So I would drive out there, walk all day, drive back, and then drive back the next day. I thought, well, that's cost of petrol, especially now. So so I started taking a little tent, camping on the top of the mountain, and then carrying on walking the next day. So again, the benefits of just being out in nature, camping under the stars, it's just been amazing. And I think, well, what would I have been doing this time last year, just watching something on Netflix that I can't even remember now what it is? It's been life changing.
So you were taking up very little gear, but you went up in the Helvellyn. I think you've now developed a healthy obsession, should we say, for equipment, for tents and things, haven't you, from what I see?
Yeah, I've got a bit of a tent problem now, definitely.
Probably not a bad problem to have, to be fair. But I remember watching, because you regularly posted about the walks and whatever, sort of absorbing the countryside by pictures. It was it was amazing, and it's all the walks itself is a heck of a challenge.
Opens up
the world.
It's not easy climbing up in all sorts of conditions, the heat or the snow or the wind. You certainly get tested.
So how did
it's a challenge, and the accomplishment that you get when you complete it, it's amazing.
So how, I mean, the wild camping, I get what the logic why. I could still see it being a bit of a step. If I was to imagine, right, I'm just going to do a pitch up for the first night. How did that feel doing that the first time?
The first time I just camped at a sort of not really a campsite, but a field at the bottom of Scarfell Pike. And then the next time I picked a very, very low hill that you could just walk up a grassy path. So I knew that, if I was in any trouble up there, I could just walk down to my car in the night. It was like 20-minute walk. And actually I loved it. People say, aren't you scared? And I really wasn't. There's nothing to be scared of. Nobody knows you're there. People think there are like axe murderers wandering around the fells. We don't have any predators. The only danger is the weather. And again, that's why I'm a bit of a gear addict now, because that can be dangerous.
And it's interesting that you started, I guess, in that small way, small, safer way, but built as your confidence and your experience grew, which is really important.
Yeah, I mean, the first time you go out, you pick a very low hill. You go when the forecast is glorious sunshine, and then you build up from there, and you end up camping in -10 and gale force winds in the snow. But yeah, you build that up slowly, of course. Yeah, and I've met, again, I do some of it on my own. I've met some amazing people through this hobby as well.
And cooking skills, just as a quick aside before we move on to the thing, but your cooking skills on the side of a mountain always seem very impressive, because there's always a nice little pan with some very what looks like very tasty food cooking away in there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not a good cook, but these packet rice, you can get these packet rice, high calorie things. They're about 8 or 9 pounds for a packet of rice. And to me, cooking and photography as well, they're just a part of the whole experience. Yeah, I mean, I'm a very keen photographer, and hiking and wild camping just fits very nicely with that. But I mean, don't be fooled by the pictures of my food. They are just like a jar of sauce and some rice, generally.
All right, so you've ruined the illusion there now for me. But the photography is just again another thing, because you used to be a photographer, didn't you? Was that before?
It's always been like a passion of mine and a hobby. And then I started to do it professionally, just as a sideline, because I used to work part-time when I had my baby, and I thought, oh well, I'll set up my own little business. But to be honest, I found it quite stressful. It took the joy out of something I loved. And I just found it quite stressful, and I stopped doing it because I wanted it to be a hobby rather than something that I had to do. I did weddings for a few friends, and just the stress of, God, if I don't get this picture of her walking down the aisle with her dad, like that's it. It was really difficult, and I'm not kind of bossy. It was like herding cats as well. I used to have to take my mum to shout at everybody, and I'm like, no, this isn't, it's just not for me. But I still love it. I still love it just as a hobby.
It sounds like that, although there's a point where before the journey started, if you like, where you were in a rut and realized that there was that spirit in you to try things, to do things. Is that how would you describe you as a person, before, or generally? Because obviously it seems like the spirit's there now, out
Yeah, no,
on the ground.
I think it was. And for me, I think when I started, because I've always been a solicitor, I was a defence solicitor and then a prosecutor. So I spent my days in court with the hustle and bustle of that. And then I started working from home on my own at night. I work nights and weekends on social hours. And the night shift just totally drained me, and just bit by bit, I think it really wasn't good for me. And I know a lot of my colleagues feel the same. But I did enjoy the job. I liked working on my own. I liked the sort of peacefulness of it. And I thought, how can I make this work for me? And now I have, but it did take a while to find my feet, and it definitely took some help from you.
I think this is where we might do something we love or enjoy, but by increments you can sort of start to lose a bit of yourself or other parts of yourself in that. And th this is really, it's about recalibrating and getting back to that, because you can make things work for yourself. There might be challenges financially and what have you that you have to address first, I guess. But I think getting back to that spirit of whatever that is, it for you, it's that adventure and trying things and setting goals. A question on the goals then, because that seems to be a key thing throughout this journey, is that you have something that you're working towards, have some focus, have something that you're challenged, that kind of thing. How does that play into to you and motivation?
I just have to have that. Otherwise, I'm a bit rubbish at sticking to things, even though I enjoy them. You know, if I managed to get a ballot place in the London Marathon this year, so I'm now training 3 times a week for that. If I didn't have that, I'd just be doing the odd park run. I still like running, but I have to have some challenge to focus that goal on. Otherwise, I would just, I would be lazy.
I wonder if many of us probably can relate to that, because I know, I think we're probably goal oriented creatures generally, aren't we? We've evolved to need to sort something, to achieve something, to make family safe, get food, that kind of thing. And I think it's translating that into the day-to-day lives that we have. I know when I did my cycle challenges, 2010, 2012, London, sorry, Lands End John O'Groats, 2010, London to Barcelona, 2012, cycling. It was the fact that I had that coming up that motivated me to change. Terror was probably a summary of it, but it was also motivation. It gives you something to work towards, doesn't it?
Yeah, I just have to love that. Yeah.
Yeah. So go on. So after the, as you got into the running, I know there was obviously some more things. There's a walking, which I think is a brilliant challenge. It's one of the best things because it's outside.
Yeah, and it's something everybody can do. I know a lot of people think, oh, I could never run, or a lot of people hate running, and I totally understand that. I don't know how people who go out running ever go out again, because it's awful. But you do, you know, you do. It just takes a while, and then you do get kind of into that zone. But walking is something that anybody can do, and the benefits are just enormous.
Yeah. So you then, there was cycling, you did a bit of biking. What was the story there, or what is the story there for?
I was so bad at running, and I thought, well, what else can I do? I'll start cycling. I was actually a half decent cyclist, and I did a few cycling challenges. I've done the coast to coast, not the Land's End, John O'Groats coast to coast, the short way, but that was hard enough. I've done that a couple of times. I've done a couple of 100-mile cycles. I did enjoy cycling. I really get out on my bike now. I've had that many close misses with drivers. It actually frightens me a bit. And it's a shame because, you know, I do enjoy being out on my bike, but the roads are just quite dangerous. I worry, and I'm not sure it's worth the risk for me. It's a shame because I was a much better cyclist than I am a runner.
I get what you mean. I mean, I enjoy cycling, but in terms of the roads is something to weigh into it, isn't it? Obviously, after the Wainwright walks and the wild camping, you're still doing that. Obviously, you completed that challenge.
I still do that. I get out often. You know, I try and get out every week for a walk. I shall be camping most of next week with a heat wave.
And wild swimming.
And wild swimming, yeah. Again, that's something I'd never, ever done, ever. And I decided to get some lessons, just because when you're hiking, it's absolutely roasting. I thought it looks really quite appealing to get in there, but I wouldn't know where to start. So I got a coach. I got 10 lessons in a quarry.
Right.
I don't remember the first time that I met the lady. I said, I'm not going out of my depth. I'm not putting my head in. And if I see a fish, I'm getting out. And she's like, oh, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. And within just a few weeks of seeing her, I was, you know, I was swimming laps around the quarry with, you know, great big, I'm not sure what sort of fish they are, but they're huge, and 16 foot deep quarry, whatever it is.
Yeah. So that led to you having the confidence to then take dips when you're out on your walks. Is that how that started, or?
Yeah. Definitely, yeah, just learning all about the safety of open water and just becoming a stronger swimmer, and again, having the right gear, having your toe float, having your wetsuit, which was stuff that I'd never owned.
Yeah, you're right. So it's kind of working out what you don't know as well, isn't it? So I think that's where that kind of coaching can come in really handy. Well, tell us about the latest stuff then, because it's not just stopped there though, has it?
No. I'm like a bit of a fitness fanatic, from couch potato to fitness fanatic. But the benefits are, I just, for your mental health as well as your physical health, like, I can't explain how much strength you get from camping on the top of a mountain on your own, that that transfers into the rest of your life and your work and decisions that you have to make and all sorts. But yeah, I've suffered with sciatica for many, many years. Some days it was okay, other days I've struggled to even get out of bed and walk. And I had tried everything. I tried physio, acupuncture, every different device, drug that you can imagine, and I couldn't get rid of it. And I remember reading somewhere about, you don't have a bad back, you have a weak back, and the only way to strengthen it is to put it under stress and it will adapt. And I thought, well, that's true, because I've learned that from my running and hiking. Your body adapts to this stuff. I thought, well, I'll just go and try lifting some heavy weights. And again, I'm lucky that I can afford to get a coach. I'd seen something in the paper about a lady that lived down the road from me was doing some heavy world record attempts, and that she was a coach. And I thought, well, I'll just go and see her. So I went and explained that I wanted to start lifting heavy weights to strengthen my back. And she said, okay, let's see, how much can you deadlift? I said, I don't know, I've never done a deadlift in my life. And it was something about 50 kilograms the first day. And then I booked 6 weeks with this lady, and she's actually world famous. I've never heard of her. And I've become really good friends with her. I still see her now. And within 6 weeks of seeing her, my back problems that I'd had for over a decade were gone, and I've never had them since. And she was such an inspiration to me, the things that she'd achieved in her life, that she introduced me to the sport of strongman, which is what I do now. I train 4 times a week and I compete in that. I've done 3 competitions now, and I've got another coach, and I train 3 times a week with a small group of other men and women, all my age, all quite new to the sport, and I've just made some amazing friends out of that as well.
I mean, it's amazing. I think it's you mentioned something before that I've heard a lot when people start on this journey, is this: once you start to get fitter and stronger, it affects other areas of your life,
Oh,
like your
usually,
decisions and what have you. And I think it opens you up to thinking about, well, my back, I've heard that this week it's not a bad back, it's a weak back. That it opens you up to possibilities, I think, sometimes, doesn't it, there for you to then start pursuing. And that really, for me, is a spirit of adventure. But I guess, I mean, as I said, this is why I was wanting to have you on, really, to talk, because I think it's really inspirational. And I think for now, having worked with lots of people, there is, if we find ourselves at a place where your health, your energy, your weight isn't where you want it to be, getting started is often a hard thing, isn't it? Because of the confidence that there's the physical things just to balance out, and you might need to sort a bit of sleep first, that kind of thing. But there's also the confidence issue. And I know I'm a bloke, and I speak to a number of blokes who they feel quite, they're doing some training outside of the gym. They've got a coach or a personal trainer, but they're still reticent to go into the gym to start doing some of that lifting of weights. But again, from conversations, obviously I haven't experienced myself, conversations with women as well, in that is that there's an added layer of that to it, potentially intimidation. I don't know, what were your thoughts? Any thoughts around that? Because I think it's an important thing to address, really, for.
I think for me, I'm at the age and I don't really care too much what people think. I think that's come from losing the weight, doing running. So when I started going to the gym, I really couldn't care less what anyone else thought. And I'm quite lucky, really, that that's the way I feel. I mean, I walked into this gym, I had no idea what a strength gym even was. It's not a commercial gym, it's totally different. I walked in, I didn't know at the time, but I was surrounded by world record holding athletes. And she got me an empty bar and she said, we'll just start with this empty bar. And I was like, there's no going anywhere. And she said, I'll get you a lighter bar. And I think it was something like 12 kilograms, this bar. And I was weak as a kitten. And I couldn't even lift it. And she had to go and get a broom handle at the toilet. I mean, there was women there putting 100 kilograms above the head. And I was started with this broom handle. And I was just made to feel so welcome. It was just just great. And I look back now, to the sort of weights that I can lift now, and they just seemed absolutely impossible. There's no way I will ever lift that. And she's like, "You will, you will." And consistency is key. It really is. And I think the best thing about the sport of strongman is that you're not training. You don't care what your body looks like. You're not training for any sort of aesthetic purpose. You're training for strength and for the numbers on the bar and what your body can do. And I think it really makes you appreciate your body for what it is, which is, this vessel. And I've still got rolls of fat, stretch marks, cellulite. I just couldn't care. Just couldn't care less. I mean, I'm glad I'm not younger and growing up with social media like the young girls do these days. But my training is purely now for performance. It's all about, what can I lift, what competitions can I enter, and then training to kind of try and get to that weight. And it's just been the best thing ever, just taking that focus away from, oh, I've got to run on this depot to burn off that McDonald's I had. It's just not that mentality at all. And it's, for me, it's much healthier and much more enjoyable to do a sport you love, to set goals for yourself that are physical rather than aesthetic. I'm glad I've lost my weight. I'm glad I'm a healthy weight. But other than that, do I care about having a certain size waist or no? Not at all.
I think this is the thing, isn't it? It's that I wonder if in terms of life, that shedding of some of that pressure that we possibly put ourselves or definitely put ourselves on under as a younger person, and that I totally get, you look at the youth today and the pressures that they're under,
Oh,
it's so
yeah.
magnified. And that point that there's an opportunity as we get into midlife to, when we start to reclaim our health and start to shift around things around, is to say, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going back to there. That's not what I'm worried about. What I'm wanting to do is I'm wanting to, as you say, get to a shape I'm com a weight that I'm comfortable, get stronger, just feel better in myself, get that healthier step back, and have some goals, something that proves to me. And this is what I think you epitomize to me, is that, it doesn't matter what age, doesn't matter what we're doing, it doesn't matter. And it feels like you're going to just keep going, and it doesn't, there will always be something in the future, whatever the next challenge is, whatever the next one is. And to me, that's the spirit of that restless midlifer, really, isn't it? That
Yeah, but I just
not
want to
feeling.
suggest to people that, if I can do it, anybody can, because I have no natural ability or talent when it comes to any sport whatsoever. I don't have good genetics for sport at all. I'm academic, desk job, that's me. I did my competition, I came last. There were seven of us, and I came last by quite a lot. But it doesn't matter, I was competing against me. And I got PBs, huge PBs in every single event, and that was what it was about. So I came away from that as the last place winner, definitely. And the people were amazing, everybody. I've met so many lovely people in this sport. And I train now 3 times a week. I go to my set sessions, and there's hardly ever a time that I think, oh, I don't want to go to this. Like, I'd feel like I'd lost my right arm if I couldn't go and train with my friends. Now they're like a little family to me.
Yeah, and I've spoken about that in the past a couple of times as well. I think it's the community that you build up around it that it's an unexpected, for me, it was an unexpected huge bonus that then keeps you going, keeps you
Yeah.
feeling like you have to go, and adds to the enjoyment of it. So
Very much so, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've built up quite a lot of decent sort of gym kit at home. And if I have to, I will train at home on my own. But generally, I would much rather train with a coach and with the people that I compete with, because they're like-minded people. They're very goal orientated. They're very positive. We support each other.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
love that. A quick question about the you're competing against yourself, because I think that's an interesting one, isn't it? That it can be easy to sometimes, and maybe it's with the male ego in me, that sometimes I look around the gym and I think, oh, I should be pushing this that kind of weight. But coming back to it, when I'm standing doing the CrossFit and I've got a bar in front of me and I'm thinking, right, I can get so absorbed in, doing the technique right, and then just seeing those small incremental changes, the sprout size changes, I guess, and feeling such a great feeling of like, yes, I'm improving, I'm progressing, I can see this. And,
that's what you have to focus on. I think it was William Shakespeare, wasn't it, who said, comparison is the thief of joy. And it's so true, because if I compared myself to any other competitors, I would just think, oh, I'm not doing this, I'm not good at it. But if I compare myself to how I was 5 years ago, when I compare myself to people who compete, I'm comparing myself to some of the strongest women, out there. So it's just, it's stupid to compare my journey with somebody else who's perhaps 20 years younger or 5 stone heavier or been lifting for 20 years or has perfect nutrition, perfect sleep. There's just no point. I compare myself to, my last PB, and if I get PBs, I'm happy. I couldn't care less if I come last. And I think, again, that comes from a confidence that you build, that you get from doing this stuff.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I get it. And just on that note, then, just in terms of setbacks, or when perhaps you don't quite hit it, or you don't do as well in a particular day. Because I think the psychological lessons we can learn from this, for me, I take away so much from doing that physical and those incremental things, the setbacks. How do you find those? If you're having a bad day or something's not quite.
I just remind myself that I'm not a professional athlete, this is just a hobby. It doesn't matter if it all goes a bit wrong and I don't, I did a competition last week and I didn't get any reps on one of the events. Nobody cares. It doesn't matter. It's a sport that I love. Some days it goes brilliantly. Other days you're not very good. And I just think, well, it doesn't matter. I enjoy it. Sometimes it's difficult because when you've been lifting for quite a long time, the progress is obviously really slow. Sometimes you don't see progress. You kind of feel like you're a bit stuck. But I just enjoy the training. I love the people. I don't get too kind of wrapped up in, oh, well, I could have done this better. I could have done that better. You just take the lessons and try and learn from it. But I certainly don't. I know some people, are absolutely destroyed when they have a bad competition, but I just don't have that.
It doesn't
affect me like that.
And I think it is obviously individual, but also I think this is where, for me, the lessons are transferable to the rest of life, that we're going to have ups and downs. The rug's going to be pulled from us in unexpected ways. And how do we get our head back to, we're down when we need to be down, all that kind of thing, but we get our head back in the game and learn the lessons and to pick ourselves back up. And I think that's where these kinds of activities, the goals, the sports, the working forwards, the setbacks can really transfer.
Very much so. They definitely transfer into other areas of my life. I used to be terrible for giving people who didn't deserve it time, energy, again, and it just drains you. And definitely now the people that are in my life because they bring something to it, they add something to it, and I've got much stronger boundaries. Find it much easier to sort of say no to people, get rid of people who aren't good to have around me, and all that comes from, I would say a lot of that has come from the sport, and feeling stronger physically gives you mental strength.
And I think that's the beauty of it. And this is why I personally think that health, if we're in a place, and it does happen to a lot of us in that midlife, air quotes, midlife part. I don't think it's so much an age, it's more of a mindset. You get to a point where you think, is this it? But that health is a great place to start, because you can, with those small incremental changes, you can build and build. But it has so much of a benefit in other areas of life, as you say, with the boundaries, the decisions you make, the friends you have, the goals you might set professionally, personally, whatever. I think it's such a big part of it, and a great place to start. It pays back in so many ways, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Just start small with something that you think you can improve with your health. Like say for me, it was the sleep. Then it was just being a bit more active, losing the weight. And it's been life changing.
Yeah, cool. Just a quick one before, because I'm conscious we could probably talk for a lot longer, to be fair. You mentioned the current your current training, and that you are monitoring your calories at the moment, and is that right? Or you have been?
Well, I trashed my knee when I was out hiking, so I couldn't train very much for a long time. And then in January, I had knee surgery, so I couldn't do anything. Right. I was just laid up, and I was terrified that because I couldn't get out walking, running, I couldn't do my strength training, you know, I was really worried that I was going to put the weight on, because when I sit around the house doing nothing, that's when I just eat. Nice. So my strongman coach also did nutrition. So I signed up for a 3-month plan, which was my downtime, just to be accountable, to make sure that I didn't put the weight on, because I thought, oh, if, you know, if I put all the weight back on, will I go back? And I felt like I could really easily have gone backwards and lost all the good work. So that was really, for me, it doesn't seem natural or healthy to track every morsel that you eat and put it in an app all day. But I felt it was necessary, because I really could have lost the plot. Yeah. You know, just being cooped up, you know, I couldn't drive, I couldn't do anything. And I just knew that, you know, sitting around all day and then sitting around all night at work on shift, I could have easily in 3 months piled a lot of weight on, and I know how much it would have taken to kind of get back. So I just wanted to make sure that didn't happen. And so I signed up with him, and I tracked all my macros, all my calories. I had to do it every day, every single thing I ate. It was quite, you know, it was quite arduous, really. And then I had check-ins with him, and but it kept me, you know, it kept me sane for those few months. I don't do it now. Yeah. But again, it was helpful at that time in my life. And again, some people who need that sort of, you know, regimented, that might be really good for them.
Yeah, it's interesting. For me, there's no, I mean, I suppose there are wrongs, but there's no right or wrong. It's about working out what's for you and knowing that there are tools that you can pick up and put down. You know, you don't need a hammer all of the time in your hand, but sometimes you've got a nail knock and you use it. And I think that's a great example of, you know, there will be times, I guess, for many of us where an injury, something in life, a job change, or something happens where suddenly your head is in a different place. And at that point, expecting you set yourself to maintain what you were doing is probably unrealistic or not there. So what can you do? That's when you might bring a tool like, and as you say, accountability. And it sounds like that's really helped to then put you in a position where you can say, I don't need that tool anymore. I'm back to it.
Yeah, because you can get a bit obsessed with kind of food. And for me, when I'm active, you know, that's enough. I've maintained my weight loss for quite a few years now, so I'm obviously doing something right. But for those few months, I knew I needed something different and something extra to stop me going backwards. And it worked, and it was really good. And I know a lot of the ladies do nutrition, you know, constantly. They've been on it for years, and they've lost tons of weight as well as getting massively stronger. So it's worked for them.
Yeah.
So everybody has different things out there that work for them.
Yeah, you're right. And from my point of view, I'm currently doing a bit of a calorie track, and just as a test for me, because it was something I've done in the past, but I found it such a faff. It's a lot easier with apps now, but it's still a faff, isn't it? Yeah. But it's an education as well. Because
very much. And with my lifting, obviously, I had to eat a lot more protein, and I didn't know how, but I had no idea how much protein I ate. And then when I started tracking it, my coach was like, "You're not eating nearly enough to make the strength gains that you want to gain." So that was quite useful. But I do tend to eat the same thing, so I don't need to track it now, because I know just roughly what protein I get each day from doing that 3 months worth of tracking. So
yeah, that's interesting, actually, because one of the things I'm finding is the sort of hitting the sort of roughly the calorie target that you're aiming for is probably not the challenge. The challenge is getting enough protein. It seems to be just in my short experience of the last few weeks when I've been doing it, it's the environment we're in, it's so much easier to eat the carby stuff. And I'm not anti-carb by a long shot, but I think it's easy to eat that and to not eat enough of the protein sources.
That was, you know, I would never ever have a problem eating enough calories. Like, there were a couple of ladies at my gym, I'm like, oh god, I can't eat that much. That's never a problem I would ever have. I can't imagine myself saying that. So I would always easily be able to eat enough calories. But hitting that protein goal. And that was good because I had to kind of stick to the calories and I had to get the protein in, and that didn't leave that much room for eating a load of junk. So that
Yeah.
was really good, changing that and eating a lot more protein.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? I think because there's a lot of, I'm sure we could talk a lot longer about this, but there's a lot of myths or misunderstandings around taking in protein and even weight training, muscle build, strength building, particularly in women, and the worry about building big, huge
Oh,
physiques and all that. And I think,
I get this from everybody, well-meaning family and friends, and if people knew how difficult it was for women to put muscle on, you have to, just dedicate your life to this training. You also have to be super lean so that the muscles will show. And if you want to get really big, I mean, these ladies take steroids, so you no matter how much you lift, you are not going to get bulky. It just is not going to happen. People dedicate their lives to trying to get this muscle. I mean, I look the same because I've got quite high body fat. I think I quite like being curvy. I think when I'm nearly 50, I don't want the wrinkles. I like that bit of extra. So yeah, I just look the same as what I did before I started lifting. I probably don't underneath, but I'm not lean enough to see that. But again, some people want to be, and they would sort of strip that body fat off, and you definitely get a good shape if that's what inspires you. It's not what motivates me.
And I think it's that's one of the perceptions, but the benefits of getting stronger for men and women, particularly in our age, that age group, I mean, you're younger than me, but in the ages, we have to protect the muscle because it declines, and build because it can strengthen bones, and protect us going.
Osteoarthritis. I mean, I've got grade 4 osteoarthritis. It's really severe and advanced. My knee scans are like an 80-year-old. And the NHS have very recently changed their advice. It used to be, just do a little bit of walking and take all these drugs. And now they're saying, you need to get strong. You need to support that knee with big quad muscles. It's the best thing you can do. And it's helped. It's definitely helped my arthritis getting stronger. There's no doubt about it. But I've had a lot of women, what are you doing that for? My husband's very supportive, but I know some of the ladies that do it, their husbands really aren't. What's a woman doing, especially of your age? But again, that comes down to just not really caring about what other people think, which is quite a good attitude to have. But there are a lot of misconceptions. I know my family don't mean any harm when they sort of say, "What are you doing? You're going to hurt yourself. You're going to look massive." And it's just, they just don't, it's just ignorance, really. They just don't understand the benefets of, like you say, protecting your bones, protecting your joints as you get older. Just doing things like, being able to get up and downstairs, just living an independent life. I think it's for everybody, however old you are. And the older you are, probably the more important it is to do strength training.
Yeah, absolutely. I often think about it's building for midlife and beyond, isn't it? Because it's that protective factor. You're putting into a pension, a strength pension, or well, you are putting into that strength pension. And it's interesting about the myths and ignorance. It's understandable. I remember my granddad used to say, because when I was 16, I got into some Olympic lifting, the weightlifting and things like that. And he'd say, "Oh, can't be building that muscle because it'll just turn to fat." And that was the myth. Yeah, it's when you stop, it'll all turn to fat. And like at the time, I thought, "Oh, don't be silly." And now you know that's not true, but it's these pervasive myths that have obviously that still hang on in there. So
And
I
they're
understand.
surrounding women and strength training, that those myths are huge for people who don't do it. And I would say just do it and you'll see the benefits for yourself.
And I and as I say, this is one of the reasons I wanted you on the podcast, was to share that, because I think, as a bloke, I can only speak from a bloke's perspective. And I might say the same thing, but it doesn't, it's not coming from somebody who's lived it, breathed it, and is doing it, and is an inspiration as well. And you're not just an inspiration to the women, you're an inspiration to me, and a lot of midlifers who are thinking, are probably possibly in that position of thinking, "I've got to do something, like I've got to do something."
I just think you've got to find, that sport that's for you. I mean, for me, I know you do CrossFit and you love it, but I mean, I can't think of anything worse than CrossFit with my joints. I wouldn't last 2 minutes in a CrossFit gym. These skipping and burpees and all this pull-ups and stuff that they do. I mean, there's just, I would hate it. I would absolutely hate it. And I know that if I joined a CrossFit gym, I wouldn't last I won't last 2 minutes.
No.
So you've got to find something that you enjoy and that suits you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think especially nowadays, there is so many. You've reamed off a handful of things that you've done there and are doing, and I think that's the opportunities we have at the moment, you know. So I guess that's my urging and encouragement. And I guess firstly, Elaine, thank you. Thank you for the journey that I've sort of shared on over the years and the inspiration you continue to be. And good luck with everything.
Thanks for all the work that we've done together, because it was definitely sort of meeting you that kickstarted me into thinking, you know, there's more to life than this. You know, where can I start? I need to sort my sleep out. And then all the other topics that we've worked on have been great.
It's been good. It's been great. Well, thank you very much, Elaine. And now I'm conscious that, you know, I would normally ask if there's any links and what have you. I don't want to ask you as somebody who's maybe not a professional in some particular industry. But if there is, I don't know, is your... with the lifting Instagram, is that something that you share outside or not? If it's not,
it is a public page, my Instagram. It's just called Elaine Hudson Lifting. And that again, it's just when I very first started, my coach said, you know, track your journey. You don't just do it in the book. You can do it on videos, which will show your form, your technique, and you can look back at where you've come. So right from day one, because you know, people on my Facebook, whatever, aren't interested in watching my training. So I set up an Instagram page just to document all my training. So it's like a video journey. And I've done that right from the beginning. And so all my training goes on there. And again, that helps keep me accountable. And I've met so many other female, like, strongman competitors. And then when I go to the competitions, it feels like a little community, because we sort of know each other from social media. And we've followed, you know, I follow lots of beginner, like, strong women, and then I go to the competitions and we all know each other, and it's just lovely. Yeah, I know social media can be kind of toxic for people, but it's helped me. Again, that's another tool that I've had that has helped me an awful lot, is to document my training, help keep me accountable. You do get that encouragement from other people, you get tips and all sorts of stuff on there. That's something, another thing that has helped me, definitely.
Yeah, great. And it's good to see the positive side, because there is, I mean, within all of these things, they get a lot of bad press and rightly so in a lot of ways, but there's a core point to them that people like to connect and share. And as you say, chart journeys and what have you. So brilliant. Well, thank you for your time, Elaine. It's been brilliant. It's been lovely to catch up and also dig into it. And for the listeners, I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you take some inspiration. Any feedback or thoughts, then drop me a line at dave@restlessmidlifer.com. But we'll catch you on the next episode. There will be details in show notes of the episode. And we'll take care. We'll catch you later. Thanks for listening. You can check out the show notes and other episodes at midlifereshape.com/podcast. And it'd be great if you could subscribe, share, rate, review, and all of that. That would be magic. And if you are a midlifer and you're finding that your health has taken a back seat, and you really want to get life back on your terms, put stress in its place, and start to lose that weight and lose it sustainably long term for midlife and beyond, pop over to midlifereshape.com to find out about the community membership. And I'd love to see you there. Any feedback or questions or ideas for future show topics or guests, then drop me a line at dave@restlessmidlifer.com. And just one more shout out to Logan Nicholson of musicformakers.com for the awesome music for the podcast. That's it for now. Take care, keep sweating the right sprouts, and look after yourself.